Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21.
Welcome to It's Not Even Past, a history of the distant present, hosted by Evan Tucker and the production of the AS21 Podcast Network. This podcast is available on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and audio.as21.com.
Before the law, there stands a god. A man comes from the country, begging admittance to the law. But the god cannot admit him. Can he hope to enter at a later time? That is possible, says the god. The man tries to peer through the entrance. He had been taught that the law should be accessible to every man. Do not attempt to enter without my permission, says the god. I am very powerful, yet I am the least of all the gods. From hall to hall, door after door, each god is more powerful than the last. By the god's permission, the man sits down by the side of the door, and there he waits. For years, he waits. Everything he has, he gives away in the hope of bribing the god, who never fails to say to him, I take what you give me, only so that you will not feel that you have left something undone. Keeping his watch during the long years, the man has learned to know even the fleas and the god's fur collar. And growing childish in old age, he begs the very fleas to persuade the god to change his mind and allow him to enter. His sight is dimmed, but in the darkness he perceives a radiance streaming immortally from the door of the law. And now, before he dies, all his experience condenses into one question, a question he has never asked. He beckons to the god. Says the god, you are insatiable. What is it now? Says the man, every man strives to attain the law. How is it then that in all these years, no one else has ever come here seeking admittance? His hearing has failed, so the god yells into his ear, no one else but you could ever have obtained admittance. No one else could enter this door. This door was intended only for you. And now, I am going to close it.
That was Orson Welles reading the opposite of a big book, a 600-some word parable, the exact count depending on the translation, but I have to imagine it a perfect story in any translation. Kafka's Before the Law. And if you haven't read it or heard it before today, you'll find yourself pondering its meanings for the rest of your life. There's a reason that so many athletic events are over in a minute or two. If, for say, Olympic athletes had to operate at peak performance past a few minutes, they would fail to perform their optimum at best, injure themselves permanently at worst. In the same way, there is no way to expect any kind of aesthetic perfection from long-form narrative. The best short stories are perfect. They are self-contained worlds which create multitudes of meanings that never stop yielding possibilities no matter how often you ponder them. Over the last 10 years, I've thought of so many different possibilities for what the end of Chekhov's The Black Monk might mean that it would be an entire podcast to list them. Hemingway's Hills Like White Elephants is little but a conversation that can mean an exponential multiplicity of different situations. The chill of Hawthorne's Young Goodman Brown can make you speculate your whole life long about America's origins and wonder how many Puritans or how many Christians through the millennia went through the motions of faith while truly believing in nothing or even only in the devil, and how the lack of faith may have corrupted the Christian faith itself. And it would be pointless to discuss all the potential meanings in Kafka's Before the Law or Borges and I by Jorge Luis Borges, because both are not even a single page long and have enough potential meanings to ponder for a lifetime and never get past the first door. But meaning does not necessarily connote intellectual meaning. It can also connote emotional meaning. My personal favorite writer, Isaac Bashevis Singer, is very nearly a forgotten master of the short story in a very nearly forgotten language, Yiddish. And his short stories don't have the subtleties of Borges or Kafka. They're almost folk tales, like Hans Christian Andersen or Edgar Allan Poe in their different ways, or Giovanni Verga and Flannery O'Connor, and they evoke not speculation but sense impression. So grounded are they all in various pre-literate oral traditions that they evoke the entire worldview of a place and time, not only the superstitions and fears of distant people, but their hopes and values. And to me and so many others, that's almost more worthwhile than the more intellectual type of story. The meaning of these stories is not contemplative, but empathetic, and lets you identify with the extraordinary within other humans who have nothing in common with you as though they live inside your own skin. On the other hand, even the best books have to make aesthetic contortions of logic and structure and character development with 100 pages at a time of boredom and hollow manipulation to be endured until the narrative picks up again. Dostoevsky called Tolstoy's 864-page Anna Karenina a flawless work of art, and it's definitely more flawless than Dostoevsky's final four loose, baggy monsters. But part three of Anna Karenina, with all its prattling on about Levin's land dealings, would strain even the most business-savvy farmer. In terms of perfect novels, one might say The Great Gatsby is perfect, or Pride and Prejudice, or Cormac McCarthy's The Road, or Dostoevsky's earlier and very lean Notes from the Underground, or Stefan Zweig's Chess Story, or Bohumil Hrabal's Two Lovers Solitude. The latter three are short enough that they might fall into the novella category rather than the novel. And personally, I think the novella is particularly great because it neither creates its splendors by elision, as the short stories almost inevitably have to, the unsaid being as important as the said, nor does it let its author yield to the temptation of taking us through every narrative permutation of which they can think, no matter how dubious the connection to the rest of the book. And then, of course, there's Shakespeare, writer of writers, who takes us through so many permutations and contortions of logic and structure and character paradox that it's almost impossible to say that Shakespeare plays have any form at all, and yet they hurtle along to a literary momentum that breaks the speed of thought. Perhaps Shakespeare was writing the equivalent of the loose, baggy monster in an era when few writers knew how to construct a story that was more than 100 pages long. Even the 850-ish page Don Quixote is more an anthology of short stories about two characters than a connected narrative. But because Shakespeare plays are so short in comparison to later greats like Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, Dickens, Melville, they scorch on both the page and the stage. The plays absorb us as no other writer can and spit us out a different person. And then, even over Shakespeare, there is the biggest book of them all, the Holy Bible, a work probably collated, redacted, edited, and marinated over a period of 2,000 years. A lot of atheists of our time think the Bible is just regressive mesmerism for groupthink. I think it's the greatest book ever written, containing everything from the largest cosmic questions to the smallest domestic squabbles, the best intentions to the most appallingly violent ones, the highest poetry to the lowest comedy. And yes, there is comedy in the Bible all over the place, and some of it even translates to our time. So more's the shame for them. The Bible is an anthology that has themes for every situation, and as the universal relatability of its themes pops up again and again in relation to the problems of every generation, one can only conclude that even if the Bible gets all kinds of specifics wrong, it is the eternal book. And because its themes and characters are so universally relatable to everyday life, encounters with the Bible completely change our thinking about life. For good or ill, there has never been a more powerful work of art, and perhaps there can never be. And why might that be? I submit that's because the Bible is the big book par excellence. I would imagine that the limit for a book to have no excess verbiage is probably around 375 pages. But the big books, the big novels, the best of them anyway, are the nearest thing to lived experience that we get without living life, to use a James Wood analogy. Clive James, as we said a few podcasts ago, defined fiction as life without the dull bits. Well, in big books, the dull bits are definitely there. Ditto any symphony over an hour and any opera over 2.5. Ditto any double album or long-form TV show. but here's to them. Part of living life is living through the disappointing passages, which make the exciting parts all the sweeter. Even the best long novels will have one dull page for every 9 that excite. And we will be grateful for lives with so little dullness rather than so much. And as we take them in, necessarily little by little, our impressions of these works cannot possibly be instant. We don't just watch the story evolve. We evolve alongside the story, having to leave and return to it in the middle, bringing all kinds of unrelated new experiences to the book, pondering these stories and characters and themes for days. The books read us, as George Steiner might say. We don't just read them, we absorb them. They become part of us, changing our thinking as any of our memories would. I'm cringing as I write all these English class appreciation cliches. All this is a prelude to the next podcast in which we discuss Purity by Jonathan Franzen. Talk to you soon, dear listener.
Much of what happened, what is discovered now, will of course be secret. We will not be given the full answer.
This has been It's Not Even Past, a history of the distant present, hosted by Evan Tucker, a production of the AS21 Podcast Network, and brought to you by AS21 Audio. Find this and other episodes on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and our home on the web, audio.as21.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/itsnoteven past. That's it for this episode, but we'll be back, because the past isn't dead, it's not even past. If you like this podcast, consider becoming a patron of the AS21 Podcast Network. Visit www.patreon.com/AS21 and donate today. Any amount will unlock special perks including bonus episodes and behind-the-scenes tidbits. That's patreon.com/AYS21.
Copyright 2019, AS21 Media, LLC, all rights reserved. AS21 Media. What do you want your story to be?